Tiffany Lankus, Buffalo News education reporter, welcome back to Press Pass.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, the Buffalo school teachers have been working without a contract for about 12 years now in our community. Interim Superintendent Don Ogilvie appears to be poised to get these negotiations underway with the Buffalo Teachers Federation. What have you learned so far as you've worked on this story behind the scenes?
At the moment, they're kind of in a standstill mode. As you mentioned, this has kind of been something that's lingering out there. Part of the reason it's gone on so long is because there was litigation pending that went back to the wage freeze when the control board came in and instituted a freeze on all of the salaries in the city. So the unions did fight that. That lawsuit continued well after the wage freeze was lifted. So, you know, that kind of stalled negotiations. How do you negotiate for a higher salary or different benefits if you're still trying to figure out, you know, the wage freeze issue? So once that became resolved, these conversations have picked up. But as anyone can imagine, over the course of a decade, a lot changes. And so now you're no longer just talking about a pay increase over the course of a couple years. You're talking about a pay increase over the course of a decade, during which a lot has happened. A recession, unprecedented education reform movements, all of this is kind of hanging over the bargaining table. Last year, a mediator came forward with a proposal that did include some modest wage increases for teachers, also included, though, that they would start paying 10% of their health insurance. The union rejected that proposal. So now it has been kicked over to what they call a fact finder, which is essentially the same thing. He will come forward with a series of recommendations that are not binding, and then it will be up to the district and the union to figure out what to do with them.
And that was one thing Ogilvie had mentioned. We talked to him back in August for an interview about these contract negotiations, and he had said the expectation is to create a 2014 contract, as you said, that will reflect the teachers in the classroom now.
In the final analysis, it will be work rules, it will be legacy costs, paying for things into the future. And also current expenses.
That is going to be, I think, very difficult for him to do because, you know, as we talked about, so much has happened. And, you know, I spoke to him more recently, and I think, you know, I heard a little bit of a change in the tone from, let's really go after this contract and tackle this and make this, you know, the 21st century teacher contract, to, we got to get the salary issue resolved. We're not even going to be able to talk about some of these other issues like class size. The length of the school day is another big one. Some of these things that are in the contract that some people might argue kind of restrict the kind of programs the district can implement. But you can't even go to those issues when you have this, you know, the big elephant in the room is the salaries and obviously the health care.
Health care is huge. And I know in the past, BTF leader Phil Remore had mentioned, well, we'll give up the cosmetic rider to have that funding back to the district.
The reality, there's a lot of attention on the cosmetic rider, and for good reason. I mean, that is kind of outrageous. I think most people would agree. But this is one of the biggest issues, I think, of our times, is who pays for health care. And it's certainly one that the district is dealing with. Right now, employees don't pay for their health insurance, which is starting to become quite unheard of. Retirees pay a very small amount into the district plan, you know, and that's also pretty unprecedented, especially in school districts. They recently had a conversation because I think they are bound by the contract, both for current and retired employees who worked under the contract. So the trick becomes, is there a way you can come to a compromise and somewhat, you know, make another option appealing? Larry Quinn had brought forth a proposal and a presentation to have kind of a voluntary option for retirees where you might opt into a system where you're given a stipend, say $5,000, to pay for your health care. Well, maybe you don't need the Cadillac plan. Maybe you only need a plan that costs $2,000. Then you leave and you have $3,000 in your pocket. That could be a very appealing option for some people. The other thing I thought was interesting was, if you did opt for that plan, if they do follow through with this, if you do have a catastrophic event, they would let you back into the district insurance that's fully covered. So, you know, I think what some of the board members are hoping is this might be a viable option for some of the retirees out there. They might end up with some extra money in their pocket. We might save X amount of money per retiree. You know, we'll see how that goes as they move forward.
Now, Ogilvie did say that he would like to see some type of significant progress in his interim leadership. And talking about his interim leadership, they're already talking about the search for a permanent superintendent for the city district.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've had stories in the paper, you've reported. It's kind of a big question mark, how long is Don going to stay? His contract is up to 2 years. He has suggested he may only stick around 1 year. They had someone from the New York School Boards Association last week at the board meeting kind of laying out the ins and outs of how do you do a search, what are you looking at. It was interesting to listen to some of the questions from the board members because I think it gives you a little insight into what they're thinking. They do seem to be kind of reverting back to a preference for someone local or from the area. You know, there were some conversations about transition planning, which I don't think has been this district's strength ever. How do you maintain stability going from one leader to the next? And they're in a position right now where they might be able to convince Don to stay in some capacity, and he's not necessarily going to be running out the door or getting chased out the door, which has often been the situation. Sure. So is there, you know, one of the conversations they had is there a way we can either bring someone in as a deputy, kind of in line to become superintendent? Is there a way we could bring someone in and maybe Don Ogilvie would stay on as a consultant? You know, these are some of the conversations that they're having, and are probably very important to have before you go out looking for someone. Because quite frankly, you know, this district, I think, in some ways is very appealing to candidates. It's a large urban district. For someone who wants to make a mark on education, face value, it seems like a great place to go do that. It is no secret in New York State and probably this country about the politics in the Buffalo Public Schools. I have a lot of sources across the state, and a lot of people say it would be great to go there, but I don't want it to end my career. And yeah, that came up with the consultant from the School Boards Association. He pretty much said, you guys need to understand that people are watching how you behave. And the more politics that ensues in this boardroom, the less people will want to come here.
Which goes back to maybe the solution is local, because the past candidates really didn't have as much success as they thought that they would. And it was really a controversial leadership.
It is. I mean, this. I'm from here, and I've recently come back in the past year. And I, you know, I'll be the first to tell you, this is a unique community. There's any community is unique, but we certainly have our, you know, our little ticks. And there's, you know, there's politics to be navigated. You have a very strong teachers union. You have an increasing interest on behalf of the business community. You know, the less of a learning curve that someone has coming into this job will probably result in more focus on the classroom.
One of the other things I know you've been looking at is the kindergarten classroom as we ramp up for mandatory kindergarten and things become very focused on that. How are the class sizes doing?
There does appear to have been some things overlooked in planning for the mandatory kindergarten. I can just say from personal experience at this point, I was in a number of kindergarten classrooms a week or two ago, and they all were pretty much around 30 kids. This is something that you've been hearing, I think, the union kind of make an issue of. The district is expected to take up this issue at a board meeting in the near future. Interestingly enough, though, the cap in the contract is 30 children. So that at some point, somebody just, I don't think, was really thinking about that. Because when you look at other districts and even states that have class size caps, for kindergarteners, they typically run around 18 or 20. So 30 kids in a classroom can be quite a challenge. And then you hear stories like we talked about recently with the child running out of the classroom. And there's all sorts of problems that can come out of that.
So do you think a possible solution would just be creating more kindergarten classrooms, and can they afford and do that?
It is, but the hiring teachers is one thing. The other thing is the space and the logistics, because when you look, and at this point, it's almost the end of October. So when you look at going into a school and starting to slice up kindergarten classrooms at this point, you have teachers that have already established relationships with the kids. And I mean, these are 5-year-olds, and part of the purpose of kindergarten is to socialize children and to teach them rules and routines and how to interact with other little people. And when you break that up too much, 2 months into the year, I think most teachers would say that will likely result in a disruptive situation. Now, do you not do it? It starts to become a little bit of a bargain. Then you run into the issue of classroom space. When you look at overall numbers for the district, a lot of the buildings are under capacity. But then the question becomes, are those the buildings with the kindergarten hubs? And, you know, it's one thing to say, let's break up this classroom, but then you need 2 physical classrooms to put the kids in. So I think that will be something they have to look at.
It's a unique new problem to have for the city, because we went through all those years of consolidation and downsizing these district buildings. And now we're back to, we've got more population again.
Yep. And that actually touches on something else I think you'll see coming in the near future is, and they talked about this again at the board meeting. I think you'll see the district making a very concerted effort to look at where the kids are, not just now, but into the future, projecting out, you know, where are the 5-year-olds going to be? Where are the ELLs going to be? Where are our schools? And I think, you know, the purpose of doing that is to make sure that you have the building space and the capacity for the population, but also transportation issues, so you're not bussing kids across town. You know, one of the things the early childhood director pointed out is we could use more early childhood centers. There seems to be a preference among parents for the schools that are pre-K-4. So if that is the case, those schools are in demand and you have this swelling of kindergarteners and probably pre-kindergarteners coming online, you know, maybe it makes sense to designate more of your schools as early childhood centers and make sure that they have the building accommodations that they need.
Tiffany Lankus, Buffalo News education reporter, thank you so much for coming to Press Pass.
Thanks again for having me.